the vehicles that we acquire for training, they don't have the technology that the current vehicles have.
Enchanted Sky Media.
This is Code 3, the podcast for firefighters. Now, here's your host, Scott Orr.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thanks for joining me again this week. The technology found in cars today is a little scary, and I'm not talking about self-driving cars. When you arrive at a crash scene, you need to be sure the car is shut off and it won't start back up again. Because if it does, you could have a very bad day. Joining me today to talk about how to avoid that is Ron Moore. Ron's a retired division chief with the McKinney, Texas Fire Department. Nowadays, he serves with Prosper, Texas Fire Rescue. He's published the training manual, Vehicle Rescue 123, and he runs the University of Extrication. Ron Moore, thanks for joining me on Code 3.
Thank you, Scott.
Cars have become a lot more complex, especially their electrical systems. But all the cars I see being used for training are 20-year-old junkers. Do firefighters generally get enough training on new vehicle systems?
No, that's definitely an issue. I refer to it as rescue jet lag. What I mean is the vehicles that we acquire for training probably are at least 10 years old, sometimes 15 years old or more, and they don't have the features, they don't have the design, they don't have the technology that the current vehicles have that are out on the street that we'd be working on to actually rescue people. So there's always a discrepancy between our training and our real world. I call it the rescue jet lag.
For years now, we've heard about airbags that haven't deployed and how dangerous they are. That's bad enough, but now there's a new problem, automatic stop-start. What is that?
Well, a vehicle with automatic stop-start, when the vehicle is being driven, it's in gear, the electrical system is energized, everything's working normally. When the operator comes up to a stop sign or comes up to a traffic light or is stopped in regular rush hour traffic, to save fuel, which gives it a better mile per gallon, the auto stop feature is designed to actually shut the engine off, the motor. So at that point, it's living off of its electrical system. And as soon as the operator takes her foot off the brake pedal, it fires back up. The challenge for us as responders is the fact that I could arrive at a crash, an occupant could be seated as the driver. If their foot is on the brake while I'm interacting with them, the car would be completely silent. In other words, the engine would not be running. But that moment that that occupant, the driver, takes your foot off the brake pedal, it suddenly is a car that could literally be in gear. Now it's got the engine running and it could move forward. So responders need to be aware of the auto stop start feature and be able to quickly identify how to approach a vehicle safely and how to get it shut down. If I put that vehicle in park, it doesn't matter if the engine's running or not. If I turn the ignition off, it doesn't matter whether the auto stop is working or not. So there are some critical things that responders need to do quickly. And one of them is physically avoid standing in front of a vehicle before you've got a rescuer inside to make sure that it is truly powered down and truly a safe vehicle to be working in and on and around.
One major concern is that you can't tell just from a quick look at the exterior which cars have this technology.
Absolutely correct. Auto stop start is almost like an invisible feature. There won't be anything exterior that'll tell you the car has that feature or not. At the most, in an operating condition, it might be a small button on the instrument panel, or it might be a small emblem, a lit up icon on the instrument panel that is nothing that is reliable. By the time you see that, you're already in close proximity to the car. So we just need to get in the habit of staying clear of these vehicles from the front, quickly getting inside and making sure that one of our own rescuers is telling us this vehicle is now safe, it's in park, engine shut off, it's now powered down.
I think a lot of firefighters will habitually step in front of the vehicle to open the hood and cut the power. But you're saying that's not safe?
Correct. Although the need is to shut down the power, the 12-volt electrical power, and by a huge majority, the battery or batteries are under the hood, we do inherently need to get to the front of the vehicle. It can't be something that we rush into, putting ourselves in that position, until we've assured that some internal actions have been taken to power this car down and make it safe to be that close to.
What are those procedures?
Once we arrive at a vehicle, I recommend that firefighters consider a simple task of chalking the wheels. If you bring off two wheel chocks, if you bring off even two pieces of cribbing, just chalk the front and back of one tire on the drive axle, which is typically front wheel drive. Throw some chocks. Now that the car has less chance of rolling or drifting or driving forward away from where it is now. Secondly, gain access to the interior. Put the vehicle in park. That may be a lever. Now on a modern day car, it may simply be a push button. Put the vehicle in park. If you have the ability to set the emergency brake or the parking brake, again, that may be a lever or a push button, do that. But definitely while you're inside, turn the ignition off. That can be a key, an older style standard key. It can be a new style where it's the push, stop, start, push button to turn the ignition off. Turn the ignition off. Now, at that point, we've got some critical inside actions done. And that's just one rescuer that can do that real quickly. Bang, bang, bang. It's all done. Now we can work on opening the hood, locating the 12 volt battery, and continuing now with the 12 volt power shutdown process.
Now, I was amused to see a photo, I believe it was of a Lexus that you had on your site, where when you open the hood, you can't see anything. It's just like a big sheet of plastic or metal.
Exactly. One of the features that some of the automakers are doing is they're putting shrouds in the engine compartment. And when I ask them why that is, I tell them it conceals everything that I need to get to as a rescuer. One of the deals is it makes the car more aerodynamic, and also it keeps the engine heat in, making the engine run hotter. Therefore, it burns fuel more efficiently. Therefore, it gets better gas mileage. So shrouding is getting to be more common feature. What that means for us as a rescuer, if I raise the hood, it isn't going to automatically reveal everything in the engine compartment. I may have to start popping some trim, popping some shrouds, some covers out of the way just to try to find some of the essential elements of inside the engine compartment. Primarily, I'm looking for the one or two 12-volt batteries.
And that brings us back to where we started. How do we get people trained to do all this if the cars we use for training are 15 years old?
So to fight the effects of rescue jet lag within your organization, you can simply do pre-planning. You could take a crew and you could go to a new car dealership, explain to them that you would want to look at safety features on new vehicles, 2017s or now 2018 models, and have them allow you to raise the hood, open the doors, open the trunk, even in a showroom setting or out in a new car sales lot, and just walk around and get familiar with how these things look or how they're designed or where they're located. It's pre-planning on vehicles. Similar, we do pre-planning on target hazards, hospitals, nursing homes, schools, and big facilities from a structure fire standpoint. We're just pre-planning to try to bridge that rescue jet lag gap.
What about hybrids and EVs? Those have their own hazards. Can you talk about those briefly?
There is every hybrid vehicle produced, there is an emergency response guide, ERG, produced by that manufacturer, Honda, Toyota, Ford, Tesla, it doesn't matter. So you can go to the websites of those individual automakers and you can download and review emergency response guides for those vehicles. Same way with electric vehicles, Tesla, the Nissan Leaf, and the like. So that's one place to start. In addition, I would go to dealerships that sell the Toyota, that sells the Prius, the Nissan that sells the Leaf within your district. And again, ask if you can do some pre-planning, some tour and some inspection of those vehicles to get familiar with them. One of the key differences with hybrid and electric is the fact that they have that second electrical system, the high voltage. It could be 300 volts DC or more. So we need to understand where those batteries are located, where is the rest of the wiring. We need to recognize and see the color orange, meaning 60 volts DC or greater. We need to look at, is there a cutoff or shutoff for this vehicle provided by the manufacturer? Some of them provide basically kill switches, are called service disconnects, that we could actually shut down the high voltage power. So I think with a little pre-planning, you can understand how to take a hybrid or an electric vehicle that has additional features, therefore additional risks, and how to render that safe, the equivalent of a conventional vehicle, how to render it safe for us to be working in, on, and around at a crash or a fire scene. NFPA has one website where they consolidated all of the emergency response guide, EV safety training, all one word, evsafetytraining.org. You can go to that one site and download all of the ERGs for all of the hybrids and all of the electric vehicles. So that's a place to start as well.
Okay, Ron Moore, thanks for being on Code 3 this week.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you for the opportunity.
And there's a link to order his book at code3podcast.com/electrical. And that's our show for this week. Have you become a patron of Code 3 yet? It's your opportunity to support the show. We're asking for monthly pledges at all levels, and we're offering rewards for them, too. So what's Code 3 worth to you? A buck a month? Five? Ten? More? Just head over to the website, code3podcast.com, and click on the Patreon link so you can become the next patron of Code 3. Thank you for being here. I'll be back next week with more. I'm Scott Orr, and until next week, I'll see you later.
Code 3 is a production of Enchanted Sky Media. To get in contact with us, visit code3podcast.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. Don't miss an episode. Find us at the Apple iTunes Store, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.